Ecclesiastes chapter 2 is what we're going to be looking at this morning. We're going to look at verses 1 through 11, and we'll read those in their entirety in just a few moments. You know, we're going to set aside about 30 minutes this morning. Don't start your watch right now. We're already a little ways in, and we don't know. It doesn't always end up being right 30, but many times when we have a sermon or listen to a sermon, someone get up here and talk, that's approximately 30 minutes. And you may be thinking, what does 30 minutes mean? You know, how could I spend 30 minutes of my life? Well, hopefully this morning we'll be spending it in a very beneficial way. But if you take that 30 minutes and apply it to the world as a whole, how many people do you think will die in 30 minutes? Probably could get a lot of different answers to that particular question. We can go back and get a fairly accurate answer. In fact, the answer is 3,240 people. You might ask someone, well, how many people do you think would die on an average day? And not having given that answer already, you might get a wide range of answers, anywhere ranging from maybe the hundreds to the thousands. But surprisingly enough, if you do the math, over 150,000 people leave this earth on any given day. That's 1.8 people per second that die of whatever it might be, whether illnesses or accidents or disasters, whatever the case might be. That's the average. And I ask you that question this morning as we begin our thoughts, not to depress anyone or get us thinking in a morbid way, but it's something it's real. How many people of that 3,240 that would die in a 30-minute time frame have found meaning? Solomon writes here about that. And as we've looked, Joe, a couple of weeks back, both Sunday morning and Sunday night, looked at what some of the things that Solomon said, this is meaningless. This means absolutely nothing. But then he shares with us some of the things that he's been through. And he said, I've been able to do these things and still I'm lacking meaning. Believe it or not, I think all of us are engaged in a search either for happiness or to find the meaning of life. And I think we would all have to agree with that. Look around you and think about what you see going on. As you look at the media, the literature, and even the culture in which we live in, happiness is something that I think many strive for, to find meaning. What can I do to find meaning in this? I don't want to just go around haphazardly without finding any meaning to life. Where's the meaning? I've noticed really five things when we look at our culture. We find a culture that's attempting to define human existence. What's human existence all about? Number two, a culture which asks, does my life have any meaning? Number three, a culture which is afraid to ask the tough questions about life. And that's probably true. Number four, a culture which is afraid to be honest about itself. And then number five, a culture which wants answers to the tough questions, answers on how to be happy, and answers on the meaning of life, but yet are looking in so many wrong directions, different directions, directions that are leading in the wrong or down the wrong path. And that too is what King Solomon was looking for. And here in Ecclesiastes, we read about his search. And I think when we look at this and engage a study of Ecclesiastes, we really have to go back, and we read this verse from the last part of chapter 1, but we have to go back to chapter 1 and look at verse 17. Solomon knew that something was still missing from his life, and as he said, he began chasing after the wind. He didn't find meaning, so he sought after mirth, after pleasure, after wine, and after folly. The list could go on. And this morning specifically, we're going to look at chapter 2. And if you're reading from the New International Version, your heading may very well say, pleasures are meaningless. You know, as I was thinking about this, a song came to mind, and it's one that, depending on how old you are, maybe would remember it better than others. But it was written by Paul Anka. And recorded by several different. Frank Sinatra was, I think, the first one. Elvis Presley then recorded it later. Titled My Way. You all have heard the song. Many of you in here have. You know some of the different folks that may have recorded that. Part of that song, though, reads, and now the end is near, and so I face the final curtain. My friends, I'll say it clear. I'll state my case, of which I'm certain. I've lived a life that's full. I've traveled each and every highway, but more, much more than this, I did it my way. Regrets, I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention. I did what I had to do and saw it through without exemption. I planned each charted course, each careful step along the byway, but more, much more than this, I did it my way. And it goes on through different verses throughout the song. And at the end it closes, "For what is man? What has he got? If not himself, then he has not. To say the things he truly feels, and not the worst of one who kneels. The record shows I took the blows, and ends up did it my way. And I did it my way." What you think of that song? That's so true about the worldly way of thinking. My way. What I wanted to do, I did that. And I think Solomon here is saying, I've done things my way, and yet it's still meaningless. There's still holes in my life. There's still things that I need to try and figure out. And you know what Solomon radiates from his life is exactly what we see in our culture today, although we may deny it. Let's begin there at chapter 2 with verse 1, talking about pleasures. And he simply starts off here in verse 1, says, "I thought in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. But that also proved to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is foolish. And what does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing folly, my mind still guiding me with wisdom. I wanted to see what was worthwhile for men to do under heaven during the few days of their lives." Basically what Solomon is saying here, pleasure is vanity. He said, I tried it. In fact, verse 3, I tried cheering myself with. That could be the title of our lesson this morning, and you fill in the blank. What are you trying to cheer yourself with this morning? What is your life this morning? And I ask this question to me as I present it to you. But pleasure, Solomon says, is vanity. Let's pick up now there at verse 4. I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water groves of flourishing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born in my house. I also owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself and the treasure of kings and provinces. I acquired men and women singers and a harem as well, the delights of the heart of man. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all this, my wisdom stayed with me." This is basically Solomon listing his accomplishments or his achievements. He said, look what I've amassed. Look what I have done throughout my life. I've become greater by far. He didn't just say I'm greater than anyone, but by far I have done more than anyone before me in Jerusalem. You know, you can go back to the book of Kings, mainly in 1 Kings, and look at some of the different things that Solomon, it mentions what he has accomplished through his life, the items that he has had during his life. Chapter 7 of 1 Kings talks about his palaces, his different houses, his vineyards, his orchards, and his water pools. Chapter 11 of 1 Kings mentions the 700 wives and 300 concubines. Chapter 9 mentions the 550 officials that were at his beck and call. What power this man had. Then he talks about his money. 1 Kings chapter 9, also in chapter 10, three different specific examples that were given. He got 120 talents, then 420 talents, and then 120 talents of gold. And if you put that in today's measurements, that's about 50,000 pounds of gold. It's quite an accomplishment. Treasures such as spices and fine stones, that's in chapter 10 of 1 Kings. And then listen what was provided for him each and every day as a source of food. Now, of course, this was for several that would have been in the palace or those that were there with him. But in one day's time, 30 cores of flour, 60 cores of meal, 10 fat oxen, 20 grade A cattle, 100 sheep, gazelles, roebucks, chickens, ducks, and many other birds that were at his beck and call as far as just the food that was provided for him each and every day. Did this man have it all? Did this man have anything he want or would want? Of course he did. And he talks about what all of that meant. And that's what we're looking at this morning. Some of you may remember the story. I didn't really remember until I reread it, of Jack Whitaker. Remember, there were many that probably have had this fantasy. It's maybe the American dream. But on December 25th of 2002, Jack's fantasy came true, and he hit the $314 million jackpot. $314.9 million to be exact. It was the largest lottery win and still holds that record of a single winner even today. Think about for just a moment what it would have been like to be Jack's daughter. He had one daughter and then she had a daughter. So he had a daughter and a granddaughter. The granddaughter's name was Brandy. But Jack gave his daughter $5,000 a week to live on. He gave his granddaughter Brandy that same amount. And at the time she was barely 17 years old. Later on in her 17th year, she owned her own apartment, several different cars, including a Hummer and a Cadillac Escalade. Jack had more money than he knew what to do with. He had received a lump sum of $113 million. Jack went to church. He was a faithful member. In fact, he gave 10% to the congregation that he was a part of, over $11 million. Now you'd think that $113 million would bring happiness to any family. What more could one ask for? The pleasures that that could produce, the pleasures that that could provide. Well, Jack personally developed a gambling addiction. He was arrested twice in 2004 for drunk driving, and then on January 2nd of 2005, ordered to check into rehab for that condition. Later that year, a friend of his granddaughter's named Jessie was found dead in Jack's house from an overdose of cocaine and oxycodone. Well, what about Brandy? She had the $5,000 a week to spend. Did her life take off like so many teens think it would if they had a $5,000 a week allowance? I can't really imagine that. Can anybody? We got some 17 years. That's a lot of money, isn't it? $5,000 a week just to spend. Well, like many her age who had more than what she knew to do with, she developed an addiction to drugs. She found new friends to hang around. And her body was discovered wrapped in a sheet and plastic tarp alongside a junked van at the home of her boyfriend. And then on December 24th of 2004, they buried Brandy. Not even 2 years after he had won the $113 million. What do pleasures bring? What does money bring? We talked about money specifically a couple of weeks back on Sunday night. But this is an example of what can happen to a real family not that many years ago. You know, appearances are deceiving. Think about money that we read about there, that Solomon talked about. The money, the women, the slaves, the great feasts, the beautiful mansions in which he lived. It appears to be a dream come true, does it not? Something that we would all think, man, we've made it. I finally have come where I want to come in this life. Solomon appeared to have it all, yet he was not happy. Today we see the drive to do the very same thing. To build large bank accounts, to live in the big homes, to take the luxurious vacations. We deny ourselves nothing. And Solomon said, that's meaningless. All this that I have, and yet my life has no meaning. Let's go on down and finish up with verses 10 and 11. He says, I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my work, and this was the reward for all my labor. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. A chasing after the wind, nothing was gained under the sun. He kind of concludes there and says, you know, I've done a lot, I've achieved a lot. And I'm sure Solomon worked hard. Yet he said, this is all meaningless. When it comes down to it all, it was meaningless. It did not bring happiness, nor fulfillment, nor peace, and did not bring any meaning to his life. And if you read the book of Ecclesiastes and you go through the book, Solomon gets to the point of saying, look, you can live your life any way you choose, but remember, in the end, you're going to give an account to God for the decisions you make. That's what we all realize or need to realize in our lives as well. You know, I think there are some truths about pleasure. I come up with just seven simple things. Number one, if all we are concerned about is pleasure, we become selfish and destroy any chance of having lasting joy in this life. I think you see that. Number two, people who exploit others for pleasure usually end up alone. You may know someone like that. Number three, pleasure can never bring true satisfaction. Number four, people will always want more and more regardless of how much they already have. Number five, possessions, money, popularity, fame, and the like will not give lasting happiness. Number six, pleasure comes with a price tag. Are you really willing to pay that price? And then number seven, nobody wants anybody to spend a lot of time talking about the pleasure they had at their funeral. What will be said about us on that last day? The one that stands saying or conducting the service, would you want them to say he or she lived a life full of pleasure? They didn't really care about anyone else, but they had every need met that anyone could ever imagine. You know, there's more to it if you want to enjoy life. And that's what Solomon is talking about. You've got to love people. It's not just things, is it? Solomon talked about all of those things that he had gained throughout the years. But it's about relationships. It is impossible to have a good vertical relationship with God and not have a horizontal relationship with people. Jesus gives us commands not to hinder our fun, but to help us enjoy what's really important in life. Does God want us to live a boring life? No. He says, you can have a good life, a life full of meaning. And I'm going to send my son as an example for you to follow. That's a full life. You know, we deceive ourselves into thinking we can handle everything. I can handle possessions. I can handle the pleasures of this world. Think about Jack Whitaker for just a moment. I didn't mention in the story that he was very well off and a successful businessman to begin with. He was worth approximately $3 million before he won the lump sum of $113 million. You'd think Jack would have known how to handle money. You would think that that would not have been a controlling factor in his life. Yet it destroyed him. Not only him, but his family. If you're not living for God today, our living is in vain. And that's what Solomon is saying. It's meaningless. Your future, according to God's word, can be bright. We read that. We must recognize that everything we've worked for here on this earth will be left behind. That's simple. Nothing hard about that. Only our relationships will survive. Our relationship with God, number one, then our relationship that we had with others. The legacy that we leave is not in dollars, but in how we've touched others' lives. And I think that's what Solomon is getting to. He said, I amassed all of this, yet there's a hole. How do I fill that hole? We're going to continue the next couple of weeks looking at some of the different things that Solomon discusses throughout the book of Ecclesiastes. Mentioned Jesus just a moment ago, and God sending him to live here on this earth. He came into this world for the sole purpose of putting us in a right relationship with God, me and you, so that you can be right with God and others. In fact, Jesus said this, the enemy comes only to kill and to destroy. I have come that you may have life and have it more abundantly. Solomon says, I'm missing out. Jesus says, here's life, and here's an abundant life. So what are we striving for this morning? What are we striving for in this life? And if we don't watch it, it's so easy for that human side to kick in. The side that talks about all of the possessions, all of the pleasures of this world. Yet Jesus, having nothing, said, I came to give life and that you might have it more abundantly. Last night the boys were playing a video game. All three of them were there. We hadn't had that happen in about 2 weeks. And I think they know their time's drawing near as far as all of them getting to be together on a regular basis. But they were playing some kind of a race game, and you get to pick the car that you want to race in. So that caught my attention. I was kind of looking at that. And Parker and Tyler were racing one another, and Jackson was watching. You know, the little guy usually gets to watch. We have any youngest siblings here do a lot of watching. So anyway, they'd be racing along. One of them would hit the guardrail, or they might crash into one another or whatever. And Jackson would always say, well, you can rewind it. It's got a rewind button. And I thought about that for just a moment. You know, so often, don't we want a rewind button in this life? We don't have that, do we? Each day, when it ends, is gone. It's over. How have we spent that day? In a meaningful way? Are we still searching for that meaning? You know, one button that God has and that He uses is an erase button. A button that can be pressed, if you want to use that terminology, that can just do away with anything that has happened up to this point in your life. God can forgive us. Many of you have been forgiven. You've been baptized. Your sins have been washed clean. That has happened to many in this room here this morning. If you're here and you haven't taken that step, you can do that this morning. What a wonderful opportunity. But I also know that there are many that struggle even after taking that initial step. We have a chance that we can go to God in prayer. That's left for us as well. What are we striving for? What's really meaningful in your life this morning? Only you can answer that question. If you're subject to the invitation, won't you come as we stand and sing?